It is so good to see all of you back again this evening. My sermon tonight is going to be a study on lessons on love from the Song of Solomon. I actually do remember the first time I read the Song of Solomon when I was a young teenager. I got to about the third and the fourth chapter, and I actually remember my response, and it was, "What?" And actually, I stopped reading it right there. I didn't go any further because I didn't understand it. And so years passed, and I was about 17 or 18 years old. I was in high school at this time. And I decided I was going to read the Song of Solomon again. And so I got to about the third and the fourth chapter. And again, I remember sitting there and thinking, what? What is this about? And again, unfortunately, I stopped reading it there. And then the third time I read the Song of Solomon, I was a young gospel preacher in my mid-20s, and I was sitting in my apartment reading the Song of Solomon, and by the time I got to the third and the fourth chapters, I was a stank hand trying to figure out, what is this book about? And so that was when I decided, if I'm going to be a preacher of the Word of God, it'd probably be good for me to figure out what this book is about. And so I embarked upon a study of the Song of Solomon. I will tell you first of all that there are different approaches and different understandings to this particular book. There are some who believe the book is primarily about King Solomon and one of the young women that he's going to marry, and that those are the only two primary characters in the book. I disagree with that approach. If you desire to read commentaries on it, go for it, but I'm not going to approach it that way. It's important whenever you're going to study the Song of Solomon that you come to figure out who are the main characters in the book, and then try to figure out when these main characters are actually speaking. And again, it may not surprise you, but there's disagreement over who the main characters are and even when the main characters are speaking. So imagine, if you would, that you picked up, let's say, Shakespeare's play Romeo and Juliet, and you did not have identified for you over in the left-hand column who all the different characters are, nor when the different characters were speaking. If you did not know who the characters are or when they're speaking, your approach and thoughts whenever you were reading even Romeo and Juliet, you would be thinking, what? What is this about? It makes no sense. And so in order to make sense, the very first thing we're going to do with the Song of Solomon is try to figure out who the main characters are. In chapter 1, verse 7, tell me, O you whom I love, where you feed your flock, where you make it rest at noon. For why should I be as one who veils herself by the flocks of your companions? I want you to notice right off the bat at the very beginning here. The one whom this girl loves is a shepherd. Solomon, King Solomon, was never a shepherd boy. He was born a privileged prince of Israel, the son of King David. David was a shepherd, yes, when he was young, but Solomon was never a shepherd. And the one whom the girl loves is a shepherd. The second individual is the Shulamite girl. Her name is never given. But you find in chapter 6, verse 13, return, return, O Shulamite, return, return, that we may look upon you. What would you see in the Shulamite? As it were, the dance of two camps. And so we're simply going to be referring to the girl, since her name is not given. We're going to refer to her as the Shulamite girl. You have the shepherd boy, you have the Shulamite girl. And then the third main character is King Solomon himself. Actually, King Solomon, and this is important, is not even introduced until you get to the third chapter. In chapter 3, verses 6 through 7, it says, who was like this coming up out of the wilderness? Like pillars of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, with all the merchant's fragrant powders. Behold, it is Solomon's couch with 60 valiant men around it. And so here is the third main character in the Song of Solomon, and that is King Solomon himself. And then you have a third group of main characters, and these are called the daughters of Jerusalem. You find them here in chapter 5 and verse 16. His mouth is most sweet. Yes, he is altogether lovely. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. There are other characters in the book. For instance, the watchmen of the city, we'll talk about them, and some of the citizens of the city later on in the 8th chapter. But the primary four main characters in the book are the shepherd boy, the Shulamite girl, King Solomon, and then the daughters of Jerusalem. If you really want to know what the book is primarily about, the theme of the book, I believe, can be found in chapter 1 and verse 4. And I'm giving you two different interpretations, or translations, actually, of the book, two different translations of the text, so that you can see the point I'm trying to make here. From the NASU translation, it says, "Draw me after you, and let us run together. The king has brought me into his chambers." Now, I want you to notice what I've underlined here, the pronouns. You have me, you, and his. First person, second person, third person. There are three people in the text here, not two. The same verse from the NIV says, "Take me away with you. Let us hurry. The king has brought me into his chambers." Again, notice the pronouns, me, you, his. First person, second person, third person. There are three people here. And here you find out the main theme of the entire book in this one verse. And that is the idea, the Shulamite girl saying to the shepherd boy, "Take me with you, let's run away together." Why is she wanting to get away and run away? Because the king of Israel has brought the Shulamite girl into his harem with the intentions of making her one of his wives. This is actually a very beautiful love story about the love between two simple people, a Shulamite girl and her true love, a shepherd boy. And then here comes a third party into the picture, the most wealthy man in the world, a powerful man, the king of Israel, with the intentions of taking this girl who is in love with a shepherd boy, taking this girl to be one of his wives. And thus you have the problem set up. What we're going to do in our lesson here this evening, we're going to study this text, and we're going to be learning some of the very best lessons on true love that you actually find in the Word of God. And so let's start off now with chapter 3, verses 6 through 10. There's something I want you to do right now. Notice the very beginning of this verse. This particular phrase here is a phrase that's going to be coming again later on. I call them echoes. That is when something is said and then it is repeated again later on. The technical term for it, if you want it, is called an inclusio. An inclusio is when something is said and then it is repeated again later on in the poem. And the repeating of it later on in the poem, the echo of it, is a poetic purpose for you to focus in on those two points and then compare them together. And so I want you to remember this particular phrase because we're going to bring it up in the very close of the sermon. And that phrase is, who is this coming out of the wilderness? In the beginning of the Song of Solomon, you have the story of the relationship between the shepherd boy and the Shulamite girl. How he puts his arm around her and he takes her to the banquet hall and he loves her and she loves him. But then here in chapter 3, verses 6 through 10, in a play we would call this the change of scenery. This is where now you have a total change of scenery. And your change of scenery begins with this phrase, who is this coming up out of the wilderness? Remember that phrase. Like pillars of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, with all the merchant's fragrant powders. Behold, it is Solomon's couch with 60 valiant men around it of the valiant of Israel. I'm going to go to the outline and read from it right now, beginning in verse 8. They all hold swords, being expert in war. Every man has his sword on his thigh because of fear in the night. Of the wood of Lebanon, Solomon the king made himself a palanquin. He made its pillars of silver, its support of gold, its seat of purple, its interior paved with love by the daughters of Jerusalem. Okay, here is the introduction of Solomon. And when he comes into this small town, probably in the country of Lebanon, when he's coming into this small town, it is the biggest thing this town has ever seen. Here is the richest man in the world, the king of Israel, coming in all of his pomp and all of his majesty with 60 soldiers around him, and he's on this beautiful palanquin. It's made of silver and gold and purple and linen. It's gorgeous. They had never seen anything like it. The primary lessons that Solomon learned from this particular event in his life are found in the 8th chapter. And it is in the 8th chapter where Solomon says this, and it's an extremely important lesson to learn. Many waters cannot quench love, nor can the floods drown it. If a man would give for love all the wealth of his house, it would be utterly despised. Now let that sink in. Solomon was the wealthiest man that's probably ever lived. And here he's making a point, and that is he could take all the wealth that he had, and with that he cannot purchase love. Material wealth is not love. And this is an extremely important lesson to learn, especially if you're still single and you haven't gotten married yet. Material wealth is not love. I have observed something in my life, and that is that there are certain people, maybe girls, that are drawn to some men because of things they have or positions they hold in high school or in college, or even sometimes positions their parents hold in the community. I remember when I was in high school in Grenada, I had a friend named Tommy. He was a nice guy, kind of handsome, nothing special, but a good guy. But in his senior year, he got a really nice sports car, a Corvette T-top. Never seen anything like it in Grenada. And here he was driving around his Corvette, and all the girls wanted to go out with Tommy all of a sudden. The truth of the matter is they did not want to go out with Tommy. They wanted to go out with Tommy's car. They wanted to be seen in Grenada waving at everybody, "Hey, hey, I'm in his car, yeah, yeah." I remember in high school there were girls that wanted to date people that were pitchers on the baseball team or the quarterback of the football team. Even in college they did that. They would want to go out with the football players. And so the whole idea is it's who you are that's making me want to go out with you, or what you have that makes me want to go out with you. There are actually people who decide who they're going to marry based solely on what someone has. And the idea of marrying for wealth. Now, there's a very important lesson you need to learn here very quickly right off the bat. Material wealth is not love. And if you marry for material wealth, you're going to be very frustrated because money will not love you. And you cannot buy love. Do not marry someone just because of what they've got or the position they may hold in high school or the position somebody in their family may hold in the community. Because if you do, you're going to find you're going to be very empty and very frustrated. The next lesson has to do with Solomon's actual speeches. Solomon actually only gives two speeches, and this is extremely important to understand. Solomon only gives two speeches. And you remember, he doesn't come until the 3rd chapter, verse 6 and following. And so his first speech is the beginning of the 4th chapter. And what I'm wanting you to see is what Solomon has to say about this Shulamite girl, and you've got to understand this. He's just met the woman and never seen her before in his life, doesn't know her. And this is what he has to say about the girl. "Behold, you are fair, my love. Behold, you are fair." Going further, verse 7. "You are all fair, my love, and there is no spot in you." Going further in verse 9. "And you have stolen my heart, my sister, my bride. You have stolen my heart with one glance of your eyes." You know what we call that today? Love at first sight. Now, I want you to notice basically what Solomon has to say about the girl. And when you read this sometime, this is where when I would get to the 4th chapter, I would go, "What? That doesn't really sound romantic to me." What Solomon has to say to the girl is, "Wow, you are good looking. Yeah, I'll take you." And that's basically it. He tells her how beautiful she is. And he describes her body to her and tells her how good looking she is. And then he says here, "You have stolen my heart with one glance of your eyes." When you go to the echo of his speech in the 7th chapter, "Your head crowns you like Mount Carmel. Your hair is like royal tapestry. The king is held captive by its tresses. How beautiful you are, and how pleasing, O love, with your delights. And so this is what he has to say to the girl, and that's basically, you're very beautiful, yes, I'll take you. You can become one of my wives. You got to understand, he had never seen the girl before. And you've stolen my heart with one glance of your eyes. Now, I'm here to tell you, folks, that does not happen. You do not fall in love with somebody because they are beautiful. You do not fall in love with someone because they are handsome. Now, you may be attracted to them and drawn to them because they are beautiful or handsome, but being attracted to someone is not love. Physical attraction is not love. And yet, I have often seen men who decide who they're going to marry based solely on how beautiful she is. Or girls deciding who they're going to marry based primarily on how handsome he is. And really, they don't look at the character of the individual. They look more at the looks of the individual. You are really setting yourself up to have a miserable life if you marry someone based solely on the fact that they are beautiful or handsome. And not only that, I need to tell you something. They're going to change. If you like that wavy hair, you may want to clip off a few locks of it because it may not be there in a few years. And if you like that muscular body, you might want to take a couple of pictures of it because after you're cooking over a few years, he's probably going to gain some weight. And you might want to take a picture of your wife because after a few children, she's probably going to gain some weight. And not only that, guess what? They're going to grow old. You know what happens to men who marry women based solely on the way they look? They stay with them until they find someone better looking. And as you gain weight, or they don't like the way you look, or they don't want to be with you anymore, they'll trade you in for a newer model. They may sound cold-blooded, but men are actually that way sometimes. Do not get married based solely on how beautiful someone is or how handsome someone is. Physical attraction may draw you to a person, but physical attraction in and of itself is not love. This is what the shepherd boy gave the Shulamite girl. He brought me to the banquet house, and his banner over me was love. In a small city, the largest building was the banquet house. And so if you went to the banquet with the shepherd boy, you need to understand something right up front. Everybody in town knew they were an item. Everybody in town knew they were in love with each other because they were always together. And when he went to the banquet hall, she went with him. And this is what she has to say about the shepherd boy. His banner over me, that's the idea of why it is I want to follow him, why it is I want to be with him, why it is I want to stay with him and be married to him, is because he loves me. There is an extremely important lesson for us all to learn. It is love that produces love, not physical attraction, not material wealth. Love is what produces love in the heart of another person. When you get to the 8th chapter of the Song of Solomon, after everything is said and done, this woman has gained a great deal of respect, actually, in the community. And so there are men from the city who come to her and are asking her questions of what can they do for their little sister in preparation for the day in the future when she is getting married. And this is the question they ask her here in verse 8. We have a little sister. She has no breast. What shall we do for our sister in the day when she is spoken for? So she's a young girl right now. What can we do in preparing her, getting ready in the day when she is spoken for and spoken of and to become a bride and get married in the future? What can we do for our sister now? And here's her answer in verse 9. If she is a wall, we will build upon her a battlement of silver. And if she is a door, we will enclose her with boards of cedar. All right, I need to explain these two metaphors to you. If she is a wall, you see this wall right here? You know, we got some pretty strong guys here. I challenge you, walk through the wall. You know what's going to happen if you try? You're going to splat. You're not going to get anywhere trying to go through a wall. There's a door right over there. Everybody who wants to can come and go as they please through the door. What is she talking about here? What she is talking about is how she maintained her sexual purity even with the man she loved. She was not a door to where men could come and go as they pleased with her sexually. She was a wall who kept herself from all men, even the man she loved. Look at this in the next text. I am a wall and my breasts like towers. Then I became in his eyes as one who found favor. She is not describing herself physically here. She is describing herself as far as her purity. When she says, I am a wall, that is, no man could get to her sexually. When she says her breasts are like towers, it's the idea you cannot get to the tower. It's inaccessible. And she was even this way with her beloved. And by doing this, she gained favor and respect in his eyes. Listen real close to me. One of the foundation planks of every marriage is respect and honor. Keep yourself from your loved one and your boyfriend and your girlfriend. Being a boyfriend is not your husband. Being a girlfriend is not your wife. They do not have the privileges of a spouse. And if they tell you, I will still respect you, you need to understand that's a lie. It will do more damage to honor and respect than you could possibly imagine. And by the way, guys and girls, don't marry doors. Guys who come and go with women and girls who come and go with men, because you're just the latest one coming through the door. And there will probably be others behind you. If you want someone to trust you and have respect for you, and if you want someone to really want to marry you, you keep yourself from them. You be a wall to where no one gets to you, not even someone you love, until you are married. There's a problem sometimes that happens, that people get involved in premarital sex. And there's pleasure in sex. And as people get involved in premarital sex, they sometimes start thinking, we're in love. Actually, you may be, but I need to tell you something. The sexual relationship is not love. Love is far greater than that. The sexual relationship may be a way in which love can be expressed between a husband and wife, but the sexual relationship in and of itself is not love. And what happens sometimes is people get caught up in the sexual relationship, premarital sex, and they start thinking we're in love. In reality, what you're in is lust. And they go ahead and they get married thinking we're in love. And then after they've been married a few months, they start looking at each other and going, who are you? I don't know you. I don't even like you. How am I married to you? And you need to know there are women out there and men out there, but especially women, who will pull a man in with sex and trap him in sex and have him marry her thinking they're in love, and in reality all they are in is lust. Beware of premarital sex. It will do serious damage, first of all, to your relationship with God. Secondarily, it will do serious damage to the person you may ultimately marry, and your marriage may be harmed by it before you even get to marriage. And third, it will blind you from the reality of the way the person really is, and you may think you're in love when you're not at all. All you are in lust. So the sexual relationship is not love. And so now we've learned what love is not. Love is not material wealth. Love is not physical attraction. Love is not the sexual relationship. Then what is it, and how can you know that you are really in love with someone? The kind of love that you can get involved with someone as husband and wife in a vow and a covenant relationship till death do you part. How can you know if it's real love? Well, guess what? The Song of Solomon teaches us that as well. Chapter 6, verse 8. This is what Solomon has to offer the Shulamite girl. There are 60 queens and 80 concubines and virgins without number. And hey, you get to be the next one. And by the way, in the end, I'm going to have 700 wives. You'll get to be number 61. What's your name again? I mean, this guy was an extremist if there ever was one. You think about that. The guy had 700 wives. How did he keep up with their names? And so what he has to offer this woman, first of all, we need to be honest about this. Being part of Solomon's harem is awesome. Great honor. You'll be taken care of, and all your kids will be taken care of for the rest of your life. However, there's really not a lot of love in there, is there? No. You're just part of a harem. And that's what Solomon had to offer the girl. You get to be part of my harem. This was her relationship with the shepherd boy. My beloved is mine, and I am his. He feeds his flocks among the lilies. The echo in chapter 7 and 10, I am my beloved's, and his desire is toward me. Chapter 6 and verse 3, I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. He feeds his flocks among the lilies. So you see chapter 2 and chapter 6 are echoes. But notice the phrase here. He is mine, I am his. This is the manifestation of true love. Possessiveness. You are mine and nobody else's. And I am yours and nobody else's. It's called possessiveness. It's also called jealousy. Look at this in the 8th chapter, verse 6. Set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm. For love is as strong as death. That's pretty strong, isn't it? Jealousy, as cruel as the grave. Its flames are flames of fire, our most vehement flame. Now, young girls and boys who are in the courting and dating stage of your life, if you ever have a young girl say to you, we need to date around to see if we really love one another, she's trying to let you down easy. She's trying to tell you, I don't love you, and I want to go out with someone else. Because you need to understand this. If she could stand the thought of another girl kissing you, she's not in love with you. Because love is possessive. Love is jealous. You are mine and nobody else's. And I am yours and nobody else's. And I don't want anyone holding your hand. I don't want you kissing anybody. You're mine. So if a girl or a guy ever says, let's date around and see if we're in love with each other. I don't think we are. We might be. They're letting you down easy. They just want to tell you straight to your face, I don't love you. Because possessiveness is one of the manifestations of true love. And let me carry this a step further. You're going to find if it's true love, getting married is going to be the easiest thing you ever did. When it's real, you're not going to have to drag them to marry you. If you've been dating a guy for years and years and years and years, and you just can't get him to commit, leave as quickly as you can. If the guy does not want to marry you, there's something wrong. Real love, I am yours, you are mine. And then you have the pain of separation. Here's one of those echoes, and this is a very important echo to pay attention to. Notice, if you will, the timing of this, chapter 3, verses 1 through 4. You remember, when is Solomon introduced? Chapter 3, verse 6. Who is this coming up out of the wilderness? That's the introduction of Solomon. Chapter 3, verse 6. This is before Solomon comes. Chapter 3, 1 through 4. By night on my bed, I sought the one I loved. Solomon hadn't even come yet. By night on my bed, I sought the one I love. I sought him, but I did not find him. I will rise now, I said, and go about the city. In the streets and in the squares, I will seek the one I love. And I sought him, but I did not find him. The watchmen who go about the city found me. Remember the watchmen now. They find her here. And I said, have you seen the one I love? And let's just stop right there. Anybody here by any chance from a small town? I was from Grenada, about 10,000 people. In Mississippi, that's pretty big. But in reality, that's kind of small. But if you're from a small town, you know this. Everybody knows you. Everybody. And if you and somebody in that particular community are in love with one another and you're an item, everybody in town knows it. And so when she comes to the watchman of the city and she says, have you seen the one whom my soul loves? They don't go, who? Who are you talking about? We don't know what you're talking about. They know exactly who she's talking about. Everybody in the community knows they're in love with each other. And so when she says, have you seen the one I love? Scarcely had I passed by them when I found the one I love. I held him and would not let him go until I had brought him to the house of my mother and into the chamber of her who conceived me. And so when she finally finds the one whom her soul loves, she clings to him. She doesn't want to let him go. And again, you've got to understand what comes in the very next verse, in verse 6. Here comes Solomon to take her as one of his wives. But the problem is, she is in love with a shepherd boy. The echo of this is found in the 5th chapter, verses 2 through 7. I sleep, but my heart is awake. It is the voice of my beloved. He knocks, saying, open for me, my sister, my love, my dove, my perfect one. For my head is covered with dew, my locks with the drops of the night. I have taken off my robe. How can I put it on again? I have washed my feet. How can I defile them? You got to understand what this is. In the middle of the night, after Solomon has come in chapter 3, verse 6, after he's made his speech to the girl and told her how good looking she is and he'll take her, this is chapter 5 now. And this is in the middle of the night, and this is not Solomon sneaking up to the girl's house in the middle of the night. This is the shepherd boy who is in the middle of the night coming to the house of the woman he's in love with, and he cannot stand the idea you're marrying the king of Israel. And he's thrusting his hand in through the open window, calling out to her. What we're seeing here is jealousy. We're seeing here is a man crying out to the woman he's in love with because he understands, I'm about to lose you to the king of Israel. Verse 4, my beloved put his hand by the latch of the door, and my heart yearned for him. I arose to open for my beloved, and my hands dripped with myrrh, my fingers with liquid myrrh on the handles of the lock. I opened for my beloved, but my beloved had turned away and was gone. My heart leaped up when he spoke. I sought him, but I could not find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer. Now look at verse 7. The watchmen who went about the city found me. They struck me. They wounded me. The keepers of the walls took my veil away from me. Now listen real close, folks. You've got to understand here. These are the same watchmen of the city that she had talked to just a few days earlier. And was asking them, have you seen the one whom my soul loves? Now this time she's up and she's going to the city looking for him. And this time when they find her, they beat her. Now listen real close to this. They're not beating her because she's looking for Solomon. If they had done that, you know they're dead. You just beat the future queen of Israel who's marrying the king of Israel. You don't beat the woman who's about to marry the wealthiest man, the king of Israel. Because you do that, you're going to die. Why did they beat her? Because they knew she was looking for the shepherd boy. And she's supposed to be marrying the king of Israel. Forget the shepherd boy. The king of Israel's here. It's time for you to not embarrass us as a community. Don't you understand how important this is to us? And so they beat her because she's looking for the shepherd boy. When you get to the fifth chapter in verse 8, I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, that you tell him I am lovesick. There's the second manifestation of true love. It's called lovesickness. And it's real, folks. Lovesickness is when you are separated from the one you love. And you miss them. And you miss them so much over a period of time, you just start getting sick and you can't feel at peace and you're not well until you're back together with them. That's lovesickness. I've experienced it many times in gospel meetings. I'm doing pretty good by Monday and Tuesday, but by Wednesday, I'm in trouble. I can't sleep. And I'm sitting there and I'm tossing and I'm turning. And I miss Linda terribly. I've driven all the way home from Mississippi to Texas on Friday night just because I was lovesick. Those of you that have to leave your wife and go out in far parts of the country, you understand this. When you're separated from them, you're hurt. You're not complete. And the longer you're away from them, the more it hurts. And you find yourself even getting sick to the point where you're lovesick until you're not complete, until you're finally back home together with the one whom you love. If you're experiencing lovesickness, it's probably the real thing. Back to chapter 8, verse 7. One of the lessons from the Song of Solomon. Many waters cannot quench love, nor can the floods drown it. If it's real love, it is not going to go away. They could beat the Shulamite girl all they wanted. It was not going to cause her to stop loving the shepherd boy. If it is real love, there's nothing you can do to stop it. Real love will go through everything and all the problems and all the trials in life that a marriage will face. Real love cannot be washed away. It's still there. Even though it's hit by many waters, even though it's hit by many waves, even though it's hit by many problems, it's still there. It never goes away. It's put this way in the New Testament, 1 Corinthians 13, 7 and 8. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. That's real love. When it's real love, yeah. When I am yours and you are mine, and I want you with anyone else, and when it hurts for me to be away from you, getting married is going to be the easiest thing you ever did. And even in your marriage, even though there's trials and problems along the way, you stay in there. And even if you have problems with health, you stay in there. Even if you have problems with finances, you stay in there. And you stay in there all the way to the close of your life. Because real love endures all things and never fails. And so if it's real love, not just you're handsome, you're beautiful. Oh, I like what you've got. You got a really nice car. Yeah, I like your job. Or your parents are important. Or we're caught up in sex. Let's get married. Oh, please. If that's describing you, please come to your senses and realize you're making a big mistake if you get married. But if it's real love, okay, it'll last till death do you part. Now you may be wondering, well, how does the story end? She's in love with a shepherd boy, and here is Solomon stealing her away. How does the story end? You remember me telling you there was a particular phrase I wanted you to remember? That phrase was, who is coming up from the wilderness? The first time you read that phrase, it is the introduction of Solomon. The first time you see that phrase, you look out to the horizon, and there is all this dust being stirred up because you got all these soldiers and all these people coming and all the pomp and majesty of the king of Israel. Wow. Don't you know they've ever seen anything like that? That's the first thing you see when you look out to the horizon. But in the close of the book, when you're told to look out to the horizon this time, what you see is simply this, leaning upon her beloved. There is no pomp, Your Majesty, there are no 60 soldiers. There is no wealth, silver and gold and purple. It's simply the Shulamite girl leaning upon the shepherd boy. Simple people who are very deeply in love. You see, Solomon did not write the Song of Solomon about true love, about number 61 of the 700. That is not what this is about. This book is about a girl, a simple girl in a small town in Lebanon, who told the king of Israel, I want to marry you. I'm not going to marry you because I'm in love with the shepherd boy. This is what Solomon learned from the woman who told him no. He didn't get that very often. This is what he learned about true love from a simple girl who was in love with a simple man. And their love was so strong, even he could not come between them. And in the end, what you see is a Shulamite girl leaning upon her beloved, and Solomon is gone. Isn't it a beautiful love story? Now, when it's just about, if you make the book about Solomon and the Shulamite girl alone, I ain't got a clue. But when you realize there's a me and a you and a he, oh, there's three people here. And there's two of them that are in love with each other, and one of them happens to be a shepherd. And Solomon was never a shepherd. And the watchmen of the city would not beat her because she was looking for the king of Israel. It's a story about two simple people who are truly in love with each other. And even the king of Israel could not come between them. Now, let me ask you, don't you think that made the headlines? Don't you think people talked about that for generations? Do you hear a girl over in Lebanon told the king of Israel, no? Wow! What was that all about? Tell me. That's what this story is about. It's about true love between common people. A true love is not material wealth. Solomon learned that. If a man were to give all the wealth of his house for love, he'd be utterly despised, condemned, rejected. Because only real love can produce love, not money, not wealth. And being physically attracted to someone at first sight is not love. All that is physical attraction. And if you want to gain honor and respect, you keep yourself sexually pure, even from the one you love. And then when it's real love, you're possessive. I am yours, you are mine. And you feel love sickness when you're separated from them. And that kind of love is real love that when you get married, yeah, there's going to be tough times. But real love will indeed endure all things. And the rivers and the waters can't wash it away. And time can't wash it away. It's still there. I appreciate your kind attention. This is the last sermon in the series on marriage and the family. I hope you've enjoyed the series. If there's anybody here this evening, though, who is not a member of the one body, and you honestly believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, if you are willing to openly confess your faith, motivated by your faith, make the commitment of repentance, we'd be glad to assist you and baptize you into the one body for the remission of your sins. If you're a child of God and there's sin standing between you and your God, we would hope that you would bring it to the Lord even this evening. We'll pray for you, we'll pray with you, we'll do the best we can to encourage you and strengthen you. If you are subject to the gospel call in any way, let us know while we stand and sing the song that has been selected.